25 years of Vampire the Masquerade, a retrospective podcast. Brought to you by UtilityMuffinLabs.com. Welcome to the Dark Ages.
Welcome to another episode of the 25 years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast. My name's Nathan.
And I'm Bob.
And Bob, how are you today?
Doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing great. It's one of those days, folks, where we're dealing with all kinds of weird idiosyncrasies, audio issues, all kinds of fun stuff, but it's great. So before we get into our regular, consistent sort of bookkeeping scenario, Bob, would you be so kind as to tell us what we're going to be reviewing today?
Today we're reviewing Dark Ages Inquisitor.
Which is, it's a core book, and we'll get into that a little bit more. And I don't know if you had the same experience, but it's kind of one that really escaped my knowledge, kind of eluded me, didn't really even know it existed for a while until we really got into the investigating of these books.
What it is with this book, with me, as a personal thing, I judged based on usage of my home game at the time, and we had trouble with playing normal hunters, right? Just people had an issue with playing something that fundamentally wasn't going to be a lasting legacy, or right. I would say more to the point, when you play a hunter, you really got to think on their viewpoint towards, you know, what hunting a vampire is. And that human side, as it was said to me, why would I play a vampire, werewolf, wraith, or whatever game just to play a human when I'm a human already?
Right.
So it's a unique challenge, I would say.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that a little bit more. Before we kind of like get down and dirty with this, I do want to give some shout outs to new patrons that have started backing us since our last episode. And we do have a question from one of them as well. So first and foremost, let me give a thanks to David Gardner, to Blake Howard, and to Grace Meadows. Grace Meadows is an artist that I know personally. She's a really great artist. You can check her out on Etsy at Art of Grace Meadows. I personally have two of her designs that are completely custom. She whipped up for me. So she has a very interesting style, like kind of photorealistic. So definitely check that out. But anyways, folks, thank you for backing us on Patreon and showing us your support. So I'm going to get into this question, and hopefully it's something we can kind of extrapolate on a little bit, because it's one I think consistently people have, and it's from David Gardner. And he says, you two have talked a lot about maturity in role-playing vampire. As someone who is constantly trying to up their storyteller game, I'd love to know what kinds of conversation and safety tools you set up with players before you begin a game to gauge themes that they may not be comfortable with for them to approach, or you may need to be cautious with and set up themes that may influence character creation. I'm potentially introducing some new role players and some vets to Dark Ages 20 and would love guidance on how to set things up with them.
As usual, I feel that we can only ever talk from our experience, obviously. But, you know, there's the recommended. Talk to all your players. Make sure you understand and make it a session zero and conversation. We've heard all this. We've said all this. Yeah. That's typical. How I really do it? Gauge your audience. And what I mean by that is let them know who you are as an ST. I think that's the most important thing. As a storyteller, you are not beholden to have to run a game.
Yeah, so that's very true.
Someone will tell you, oh, but if you don't have players, you don't have a game. That's fantastic. Maybe there isn't. Those players are for you, right? They're somewhere, just those aren't for you. But we need to understand, you know, maturity. I don't mean maturity as in an age thing or, you know, not be goofy thing or whatever. What I mean, it strictly, is that the material you get, there's an agreed upon respect that you're going to have with everyone. Respect that there's a story to be told, and respect that you are a part of that story with what you make. And accordingly, there is a time to be goofy. That should be out of game, right? That's how I always tell people. I want laughs at the table. I want chuckles. I want people not in scene to be able to make a comment now and again that is acknowledgement of disruption, right? We make it. It's funny. It's cool. We're on the side, but ultimately it doesn't stop anything. And that's the type of conversation you want to have with everyone. In other words, treat it like theater. We show up to see a theater on stage. You don't want to be heckling the performers. And it's that simple. And guess what? You're part of the performers.
Right.
However, I'm not saying don't have fun. I'm not saying don't sit. The have fun typical responses would be, Well, Bob, sometimes something said's funny, you do a one-off comment. There's lots that's written on this from other games beyond White Wolf that says those comments, that's why you play the game. Right?
Right.
Have them. But they all say this, know the line. Know the line between disruptive and funny.
Yeah. I think that that's a really important thing to keep in mind because, you know, we've been playing tabletop role-playing games, not just like Vampire and Werewolf, etc. We've been playing tabletop games since we were kids, essentially. And there has been sort of a steady evolution that I've gone through and that I've noticed about that, like, one disruption piece where, yeah, there is like, you know, if I sit down at the table with my friends and we all have like a common understanding and I'm running a scene that's very lighthearted, it's okay to kind of make the little comments and whatever. You're not really disrupting anything.
Right.
But when you get into like personal horror and you get into like these really kind of heart-wrenching situations and scenarios, like, yeah, you want to know and be aware that maybe there, maybe make the comments after the scene. As
right.
far as like what I personally do with my players, I'll give you a tiny bit of backstory. Used to be nothing. It used to be, this was my default. And, you know, we all try to grow and mature. But my default was, you came to play Vampire. I know what Vampire is. So you must have the same understanding. So you're just going to play the game I run. So you know things are going to happen, but I'm not going to go over them with you. And it wasn't until I got into interacting with this community on a deeper level, because most of the people I was playing with were my friends, it wasn't until I got to communicate with these people, with everybody else besides my core group, that I went, oh, people might have issues with things, so I should probably clear with them what is okay and what's not okay. So what I try to do when I start a session is instead of going, hey, my game might touch on these themes and it might touch on these themes, I go, is there anybody here at the table who has something they just don't want to interact with? They don't want to experience as off limits to them. And I let them go. You know, they don't need to explain to me why, but if they're like, I don't want to see any like gratuitous murder. Cool. I'll make sure to write that down and remember, avoid that or don't run a scene with them where they can be privy to it. And that's what I try to do.
And my philosophy is that I will tell you the theme and inform you of who I am. Be open about it. And the type of story I'm going to do. Bob is a serious storyteller. He does believe in fun, has a time and place. He believes all things in the world can happen in game and should. However, it's to taste. What I mean is, I'm aware by looking at you or hearing it in your voice as you try to play when something's uncomfortable for you, and it's for you to raise your hand or hey, can we just narrate this? It's a go-to. Absolutely can, and I know the line from that point forward. What I want to avoid, and it's just perception. All of this is saying the same thing, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Just know the line, but it's perception. If I sit down and players tell me, I don't want to see this, I don't want to see this, I don't want to see this, I'm already going, then goodbye.
That's fair.
Right? I'm running a game because I wanted to run a game. You're right. The players who want to be a part of it. So let's go through. You know who I am. I've been open about it. You know what you're getting. However, yeah. I'm not saying that you have to come here because you want to, Bob, you're a good storyteller. We like what you do, but I'm going to have to get therapy based on some of the stuff I know. No, not at all. Not at all.
Right.
I care about you, but I should know you well enough when you sit at the table. Or we should have the simple, in my opinion, adult maturity, respect to go, hey, Bob, is it okay if I go on mute if it's, you know, like it is now under lockdown?
Yeah.
Or, hey, I'm going to take five. Can you just narrate what happens here? No, because this is it's a little dark. Yeah, no problem. Here's why. One person has a problem with it, shouldn't ruin it for everybody else who's enjoying it.
That's true. And I think something should be said about it going both ways. I think it is the responsibility of the storyteller to know your players and to have a gauge, however you go about doing it, have a gauge of what is acceptable limitations of horror for them. But also, I think there is a responsibility on the player's hand to be like, look, I understand this is a vampire game, this is a horror game, but like these things really affect me negatively and I would just rather not have them at the game. And at that point you go, hey, I'm the storyteller. So either I'm going to run this game for you and I'm going to remove things or just avoid those topics, or I can't, and that's it. So
it's okay to stand and say, hey, I'm going to have those things. They're important to what I'm telling the story. Why I wrote a story, I'm going to tell it. If that's important to my scenes, I'm sorry you feel that way. We'll catch you next story. Right. But now I know where you stand, and that's fine. And that's what we're both saying. I'm more assertive to it. Not to say that Nate isn't assertive, but he's very open to that engagement process, which is, I'm telling everyone, go with what Nate said. Right? I'm telling you that because you'll seem a hero. Right? Everybody will feel validated and whatever. I don't sit down at a comedy show and tell them, hey, can you avoid any topic whatsoever?
Yeah. No, that's true.
I came to a comedy show to laugh, to be entertained by whatever that comedian thinks is good. Right? Yeah. And I don't know what they're going to say. That's part of it. And that's how I see it. Right. I'm not the developer of these games. I think the developers have to adhere to that criteria. And, you know, because they're trying to sell to the world. I don't have the world at my fingertips.
Yeah.
I have people to come sit down and way I feel it. Just tell them straight up who you are. And beyond that, what I'm getting to, which has already become the horse we're beating, is that you're starting with a brand new group of people. Some know you, some don't, some vet, some not. I can't see anyone having a problem with it that's a vet. They've been through it. However, the new people are going to want to do that. And so I really don't feel me and Nate are giving you solid advice because it's two halves of what, like for me, mine's a conversation for vets. Nate's a conversation for everybody, in particular new people that you're engaging with. And that's how I would say take the advice.
Yeah.
But ultimately, now, don't quiet you.
Real quick, have you as a storyteller ever had a situation where a player, and you don't have to get overly detailed on this, just, you know, yes or no will suffice, where like a player pushed you into a position where they wanted you to storytell something that you were like, I'm not really comfortable with that?
It's hard. It's like the way back. I imagine it has happened, but it never went the way they wanted it to.
Yeah.
I have to go a little deep just to represent one thing. Mm-hmm. I do remember having a guy, and we won't mention names, but you might remember the scenario, who decided that he was going to, it was important to his character somehow, to try to actually go through kidnapping a child. Right? Okay. He wanted to kidnap him. He felt that he would be able to get in the true hand that way, which was part of his concept, and he'd be an Inrathi snatcher is what he felt. And I immediately knew that this player didn't understand the first thing of what emotional torment that would be to him.
Right.
Right. You made a piece of paper with some ink on it, but it's my job to give you the emotions you would have and what that would look like when you did it. And as we started doing it, we didn't get past him preparing for the event before he's like, nah, I don't want to go through with this. Because I had to point out to him, you submitted in your downtime that you found the house and the family and the child you want to take. No problem. Well, you got to watch him a little bit to get a pattern down, right? So, yeah. All right. Well, you know that as you're there, you know that he was playing outside all day. Your ghoul gives you the video of what was going on. The ghoul's the driver. And he gets to see this kid at play. And I described the kid playing. How his dad came out and told him, hey, when it gets dark, be sure you're in. You know, you got schoolwork to do. And I painted this whole picture of a family that cared because they do. Mm-hmm. And it was realistic. The kid was a little stubborn. It got a little dark. He was caught into his dad. Came outside and took his toy and told him, well, that's that until you learn, you know, bring him in. And sat him out at the table. Mom made him go wash their hands. Adorable anecdotes and things like that. And we spent 15 minutes painting this picture. Well, this guy sees the video and then looks at the house and everybody's in bed, but sees this dad that keeps getting up and walking around the house. Well, the reason being is because he instructed his ghoul, who wasn't too good at it, to go and test how to get into this house. And so to the player, the ghoul started seeming more monstrous than he was.
Right.
This guy's callously going around, testing doors, not and whatever. And the dad doesn't know, but everybody knows their domicile, right? If something's just off, there's like the thing we do where we just check it. And as I was applying that realism, that humanity to it, those elements that the player just couldn't conceive of, that maturity piece, suddenly it wasn't fun. Suddenly it wasn't something he wanted to do. And he couldn't go through with it.
Yeah, I've had a similar circumstance, and I'll just quickly talk about this. And then we'll get on to our review of the Inquisitor book. But I had a scenario very similar where a character had made, we'll just call it a Malkavian, right? And the Malkavian, the concept was when they feed off of people, they take on aspects of their memories. And when they take on aspects of those memories, it's hard for them to tell the difference between their memories and their own. And, you know, I am a storyteller who's kind of like cut to the quick. And I thought that we had a pretty consistent agreement. Like you don't have a particular group of people you feed off of, but when you feed, these things happen. You take their memories and basically put the character in a scenario where he got memories of someone who was very much a human being that was a monster. And that player was just like, I don't want to do that. I can't handle that. So for me, it is important to go and really like be clear with these, with players and be like, are you sure you want to go? Because this is a horror game. For me, I look at like, you know, your Stephen Kings and, you know, those types of writers and, you know, Hellraiser is something that I really love. H.P. Lovecraft. That's the kind of horror that I'm trying to emphasize when I run these games. And I think that a lot of people just maybe have a different opinion of what vampire is. And so for me, it's important to go this before anything else. It's not a game of camp. It's not a game of, you know, power up the vampire and go beat up the werewolf. It's a horror game first. That other stuff can happen, but it's horror first. And if you're not prepared for that, then we need to reassess the game that we're playing. So,
and so I'll say ta-dao. That's that question in a nutshell.
Yeah. So just be open, have conversations with people, and be aware that you have to be an adult. That's it. So thank you. Thank you, David, for asking. Hopefully we answered your question. Ooh, let's get into Dark Ages Inquisitor, Bob. let's light the torches.
All right.
What's your favorite part about Dark Ages Inquisitor?
Oh, the end was written well.
Funny, you got to the end.
So the humor of this book, it's hard to get people who love vampire. And that's me and Nate. And I'm talking from our angle. We're diehard, right? Now we're reading about the enemy, right? We're reading about the thorn in the side. And it's a little tongue-in-cheek. I'll admit, we were both reading this like kind of from a Camarilla perspective. And you see what the Tortor got him doing? Like, are you serious? That guy really thinks it's, oh, we're now demons. Oh,
Do you remember that stupid-ass knight who took the piece of the cross out of that city so we couldn't get to it, but now we can get in?
Yeah, great job, Dampier. Great job. You know, it's humor to it. Yeah. But you got to understand, we said this in the beginning. This book was not for our home game. And so we let it be that. And we focused only on Vampire, which I think was the point. However, this came out because it says if you like Dark Ages, and there are people who want to play in the Dark Ages as immortal.
Right.
They want to do stuff. And they want to get things going. That's what this book is for.
Yeah.
Right? Because it gives you a purpose.
Yeah.
Right? And nobody wants to play the bread maker.
No, right? Right. Nobody wants to play the guy behind the counter. You know,
Unless that bread maker is secretly a member of the Inquisition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And he's got things to do. And that's what this book is. It's tons of that, right?
So here's my position on the hunter perspective. I have always been a fan of the hunters hunted. I have always been a fan of those. I've been a fan of when human beings and their frailty and their lack of power are able to hunt down the monsters that stalk the night. I enjoy that. I think that can make for a very compelling, very, very scary game. However, I never got into Hunter the Reckoning. I never got into the hunters with powers because, to me, the difference between the supernatural denizens of the night and the humans is the humans have nothing but their grit, their will, their determination, and their thirst for life, whatever. Whereas the supernatural, they got all kinds of powers and gifts and things that they can do that make them tough and badass. But when you give your inquisitors or your hunters these powers, that kind of disconnects for me.
And here's I think, the dramatic disconnect. And I've seen this. And LARP, it went terrible, right? In tabletop, it was a wah, wah. Right. It's because when you sign up to play a hunter game, and this is the LARP quick rundown. It was a Dark Ages game. We all attended court. I was one of four people leaving escorting the prince home because I was a somber knight. And as I was leaving, this band of hooded people showed up with the cross. And we were like, big deal. Turns out our prince, apparently some sort of deacon or whatever he is. And so he shows the symbol as they approach. And they're like, no, sir, our problem's with you. And immediately, and they were players playing these characters, like, problem. And so my hand went to my sword. Right? And so as that went down, they were like, oh, he's going to the sword? Well, I brandished my cross, vampire, and I summoned the fires of the sun, and with my faith I do, and I just stared at him. And I was just like, cool, so we burned to death?
Right.
And they were, I looked at the vampires like, what, Bob, you're not going to fight? No, I'm just making sure we're all burning to death. Like, what do you mean? You guys are so serious about the stuff you can do with that, that if we're all burned to death, if you're like Jesus Christ's sword scabbard brought to life and you're here to, hey man,
right.
If that's your story, fantastic, because I'm going to go make a different character and I'd rather get my night going than waste 2 hours here.
Right.
And that offended those players so much. And they were like, well, what's your big deal? And I said, can I speak honest? He goes, yeah, this is a Vampire Dark Ages game. Well, we were told. Right. And so we made accordingly. And it's cool if this is part of the plot, the STs, the whole nine. But what I saw was you guys waiting over here by this particular exit of the park we're playing in to wait for whoever showed up to jump them in mass and claim sort of God and Deus Vult and we're dead. Is that accurate? Well, yeah, technically, would you like to know what my humanity is? And he goes, why? He's like, because I am on humanity.
Right.
And he goes, well, what do you mean? Like, well, now we're going to get into a rule question. And when we started going down that road, they were getting offended.
Right.
They're like, you think we don't know? You don't think? And they didn't know. And they didn't know how to portray it.
Of course not. No, of course not. And in those situations, they want to fight the enemy. And they just know as players, you're the enemy.
They got cool powers and they're going to rush and do it. Right. And that was my whole problem with it, because they focused on powers. And at the time, Numina was everything. And right. So I backed it up and I said, cool. Well, maybe that was just those people. Years later, hey, Bob, Dark Ages game. Great. I'm going to run it. Now I'm going to say, you guys can play whatever you like. Anything at all. Unique thing. We had 10 players, 5 wanted to play vampires, and 1 wanted to play a werewolf. I didn't care. Knock yourself out. And then a few and wanted to be a retainer of someone and not tell them. And then the others were going to be pocket Inquisition people.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, how do you see this working? And they're like, what do you mean? Well, you explain to me how you're not just going to romp or stomp or kill each other.
Right.
And they were like, well, because we're Inquisitors, but we're not taking any powers. What do you mean? He goes, well, it's ridiculous. True faith means nothing if everybody has it. Right on. You 4 get extra XP. Here's 30 extra XP. Really? Right. Absolutely. That's a mature aspect. And I hate beating that word. It's because we started a podcast with it. But I thought it was a cool aspect. Let's see where they go with it. However, the vampire players, this does not stand.
Right.
What do you mean it doesn't stand? He goes, well, why do they get to... Then suddenly, 2 vampires. Inquisition, everybody. Werewolf idea gone. And I was like, well, how about we all just play these hunters then?
Right.
And they're like, okay, let's do it. Night one, playing hunters, 3 people in secret wrote, because this is the days, folks, where you had to write stuff down with a pen. A pen was an invention to hold ink for you, you know, young ones. And you write stuff on a paper, you know. And they would have to slip it to you. And I read as a storyteller, basically, can I have Numina? And basically, they might as well just hand it in. Each of them pass it to me. I said, what I'm going to do is roll a D10. And immediately in my head, they had to get 10 twice to have it. As it turns out, none of them. Right?
Right.
And then I said,
it's like
okay.
It's like you're rolling for like psionic holy or psionic wild powers.
Exactly. So then I sat back and went, here's the deal, folks. One of you might be. I'm not telling you what the die results were, but they're important. I had no result.
Right.
I just said 10, you and Numina. And then I was like, nobody got it, so you're in my hands now. We'll figure it out. And I was like, cool, we'll go through it. Well, we start doing this plot and everything's going good. And they decide that they finally find a vampire. And what I discovered was people don't understand what a family mausoleum is.
Mm-hmm.
And they saw one woman at night sneak in to, well, grieve. And then when she left crying, they assumed the dead was in the crypt. So they get caught by the locals and, you know, good old knight heard that you strange bishops and people who served because they took crazy stats with their points.
Right.
Were messing around in a grave. That's immediately when the game fell apart. Because they were the church. Yeah, your canon law, but there's, you know, the king's law. And as you can imagine, this went back and forth and people got mad. And finally I said, well, would it be easier if we do something where I just tell you guys where the vampire is? Someone's already scouted it. Someone already knows what's going on. You guys already know where the vampire might be based on what has occurred. And you go and do that. But because for the time, you guys were trying to tell me that you wanted to be where... you had to figure it all out. He's like, yeah. And I was like, well, we're not taking into account a couple things. Let's restart this. And I did do this. Some of you be Inquisition. That's fair. But how about some of you be knights or some people who would be, you know, in the lower income areas and be some thieves and robber types. Or we don't want to play D&D. And immediately I was like, let's just not do this.
Right.
Right. I know it's a long way to get there, but right, that was the danger of those games. You know, it just didn't work.
Right. And you know, before this book came out, you know, there it was just kind of like you could take stuff from the modern. You could, you know, manipulate it to fit those olden times. And like Bob said, Numina, hedge magic, true faith, those were things that were pretty common in the, you know, mid to late 90s before they started doing all of this revised stuff. And what I found out in doing my investigation is this is technically, I guess, considered the prequel to Hunter the Reckoning. And for folks that don't know, Hunter the Reckoning is the game that I believe we haven't reviewed any of the books. We haven't really gotten into it at all. And I've only taken a moderate dive into it. But a lot of the, for lack of a better term, powers that you see in here are very similar to what the imbued get in that book. And the morality is very consistent as well.
Right.
They took kind of the morality of Vampire the Masquerade and then kind of added extra morality to it, like additional stuff.
I could tell you from reading Hunter the Reckoning and kind of going through that aspect, even reading the novels, it feels like you're playing a crazy person.
Right.
Right. Because the imbued don't know they're imbued till stuff happens. And then It's how did they view it, right? One of the more unique things was the description of someone with necromancy, a vampire, was described as like an 11-foot tall, dead skin, bony, pallid monstrosity. It was truly a monster. However, nobody could see it like the imbued could. Right? That's how it stood out to them. That's how they were spotting them. And the imbued didn't understand the term necessarily vampire. They were monsters and demons.
Right, and that's kind of the same as what you get here.
And the reason why, just what I described, they had already done the test, right? Let's do a tabletop in Numenera. Let's see people deal with true faith. How do you guys view it? Well, if I'm a vampire, it's true faith, whatever, blow a will, contest the Numenera, jump in and kill the guy. Go out, set a range, grab a crossbow, shoot the priest. Right. And they were like, well, we can't do this because it's not giving the feel the writers were looking for what's going on. So they were like, keep those weird hunters, right? We don't want to take away anything, but let's add something to be unique and maybe fun to play. And I'll be truthful. This book might be fun to play.
Yeah.
But again, I'm dollars to donuts here telling you no way you're getting Nate or me to play it.
So here, let's get into this a little bit about like this being a core book. And I'll just start babbling. You interrupt me if you have a different point. But basically, this book details the five orders of the Inquisition. And there are the monastic orders and the lay orders. The monastic orders are the Order of Poor Knights of the Passion of the Cross of Acre, the Red Order, the Sisters of St. John. The lay orders are the House of Murnau, and the Oculi Die. Basically, there's five orders. Now, the first, I think, three chapters of this book is just fiction and telling you the tales of these orders. And for me, as a player picking up this book, yeah, I want to know some background, but there's just so much stuff to wade through here that it really started to get arduous, like 60, 70 pages in.
Right. And there's no, I mean, as far as interject, not only to cosign, it's to add that when you're reading some of this stuff, like there's a gripping story in here that more than held my attention. Talks about this, maybe it'll grip yours as you're listening, but it's this guy who's living on the street with his buddy. And it's a common thing back then. And they're trying to do whatever they can to eat food. His buddy decides he'll sell his body, which was illegal. Because they're in Rome, by the way, with this story. Can't do that. You can be killed for that. But he needed to eat, and he felt that it was better to have a full belly and maybe a sore backside than it was to be on the streets wondering where your next meal comes from, getting sick and dying with a pure soul. So his buddy goes missing, and this one guy telling the tale sticks pure to it, and he gets real sick. Basically describes walking pneumonia, and he's supposed to be a thief. Well, if you can't walk more than 15 feet without trouble breathing, you're a sad thief. Right. You're going hungry. And so he goes to church waiting to die, hopefully to get alms, maybe some bread. He doesn't know. He goes in and sits down, and his buddy appears full and hale and pink of skin and has a chat with him, says, come with me. Why don't you get what I have? He goes, I thought you were dead. He says, no, not at all. Come with me. I'll show you what's going on. And he has this weird at peace look on his face. And then he goes to this place where right immediately when he walked in the door, he sees that there's a bunch of guys who are naked, just ready to do what you would think that meant of men being naked with, people like his friend. And right. These were clearly male prostitutes, as we would call it, and I'll leave it at that. And they're scantily clothed and just kind of laying around like they're exhausted. And very quickly, this guy understood that it's an orgy. Mm-hmm. Is what it is. And he looked, and the patrons, they wore these leather masks, these black leather masks. One of them comes over and grabs his friend and takes him to a room, and he's encouraged to go with, and he goes. Because, as he put it, it was more than a profound fascination. There, he could smell sweetbreads all in this place, which is his favorite thing to eat. And there was bread besides, right? And so he's really hungry, driven by that. He just assumes if he goes along with it, sees what his friend puts up with, maybe he gets a meal, bathes, know what he can expect, he'll put up with it. If it means survival, safety, he'll put up with it. He goes and he sees his friend just crudely get bent over, and you know what happens there. And when that's done, he has a smile on his face, and this guy lays him down. Now, this is where it gets, well, it's already off the rails, but it gets completely crazed. Talks about this dude putting on a different leather he hadn't seen before. It was like off-color tan, and he was like, he didn't think of this place as a tannery. And as he's wearing this, well, as the drawing depicts, human skin.
Right.
You know, he lays his friend down and goes to this ritual where he's speaking Latin. Now, why he's telling this story is because now he's a monk belonging to one of the orders, forget which one. And he's describing that he understood now. It so traumatized him, he knew what that guy was saying. It was an oath to, like, the Black Lord of Flame.
Mm-hmm.
And the knife he brought out was a flayer's knife. And he was going to basically cut the skin off his friend. And he was terrified on just seeing that notion. But what's creepier still, his friend, completely at ease, was smiling, accepting this, and right. kisses the blade as if it's a thank you. And he gets tied down willingly, and he fled. He took off running, but nobody tried to stop him. Now, in his flight, he runs from the place, and the scents change. Something happened. He doesn't know what. And he could hear this weird chewing in his ear and some other crazy stuff's going on. And the sweetbreads, he's being overpowered by a scent of, like, urine and rotten meat, and he doesn't know what it is. And he's already, like, yards from the joint. Mm-hmm. And then he ends up at the church, but he can look from the church down the road and see where this place is, and they're in Rome. And he contemplated, how can this place exist? Now, clearly, if you're a fan of horror, things like this, this content's in this book.
Right.
In no way am I saying, in no way is Nate saying, bad writing.
No.
Bad book together. This is another personal taste of us. We stay to being the monsters. Yeah. However, I can't argue at all with the writer saying, what's more horrific than man?
Right. See, my issue is, and I've kind of emphasized this already, but my issue is, it's not with the fact that it's a horror game. To me, it very much is. But when you take those mortals and you sort of empower them and imbue them and give them these, like, rare powered artifacts and all of this, to me, it makes them no longer, they're no longer sort of the victims fighting against the horrors. They're kind of just another superpowered being. And that's not to say you should think that. That's not to say what Bob said, that this is a bad book. It just doesn't really, in that regard, tickle my fancy.
If I can give a terrible analogy, maybe you agree with it. You're watching The Walking Dead, except they have laser guns and lightsabers.
Right.
Right?
Like, that? What? That's not within genre.
Right? Yeah, like,
I guess it's not, but kind of it is. You know, it's like...
We can't shoot them in the head, but we can incinerate their entire body and cut through entire lines of creatures with a lightsaber and problem solved.
Maybe it would be like The Walking Dead, right? The mutants are just mutants. You know, they're slow, lumbering, shambling hordes. But then, like, all the survivors are the X-Men.
Right.
I would be like, I don't know, something's off about this. And, like, I know Marvel's done zombies, but that's tongue-in-cheek, right? This loves the smell of its own farts. It's not meant to be taken tongue-in-cheek. This is horror for the sense of horror. But, like, also, you know, we've got this piece of the cross that was blessed by God, and here's a thing, and here's some powers, and screw you.
So it's driving towards a tale where it wants you to understand, and there should have been something written like this, and it is, where it gives you the perspective of the actual Inquisition. And it shows how they view, they're ignorant to the fact they're being controlled by the undead. They have no idea that they're being directed in parts. I say control, I mean influence. That's what I mean. And that certain things are made for whatever. They do a beautiful job of writing in the stories previous. Like Gauthier de Dampierre, he has a footnote in some of the previous writing. However, here it's broadened.
Yeah.
And it kind of shows how he is. And he's a heralded hero.
I did like the fact that he is heralded as a hero, and they have no idea how badly they screwed up.
Right.
In fact, there's like a whole order that's formed around his heroism, and they're amazing and, you know, they give up all their earthly goods. And meanwhile, us vampires are like, you dumb-dumb.
You screwed you up. Dumb-dumb. You screwed up, A.A. Ron. You screwed up. Go to O'Shag Hennessy's office right now. But yeah, that's the feel of the game I actually do. Here's, not just in a nutshell, even up to what you're talking about, we got different orders, which is cool to read. You know, the very word occult is about these mysterious orders, right?
Yeah.
When you think of it, and it's what they do and how they operate, and they give it to you. And you need that, I feel, to help you build your own or what it could be and what it could mean. And the church is a frightening aspect. Everyone sees it as a beacon of good. That's great. But the church knows, and historians know, that it has not always had a good side to it. And this kind of digs into that a little bit, too. It's not just the horror. It's the horror of man. That's what I got to. It's the horror of mankind. Is what right. This book points out to. And it says that in a time where men are at their most survival, men and women are at their most, mankind, I just want to make that gender friendly, are at their most survival based, the commoners are just looking to eat and live and not get sick and die. Right. And the people of wealth are trying to make sure the commoners don't leave so they can not have to worry about where their meals are coming from and they have the power. However, as we've learned, if you have the power, you have to defend it.
Right.
Physically take to the field, and so they got to stay in their A game. In that nonsense, if life wasn't hard enough, there's some monsters that come through to mess with you. It's only natural that something would have developed to try to be the antibody to what that is. What Nate is saying, and I agree, 100%, no explanation needed. When you take away what mankind can do when pressed to the point of extinction, and that is what we're talking about. There has to be a logic basis as to why they suddenly get imbued and have power. It is because their backs are against the wall and they've seen enough evil. And enough people have come to the church and demanded an answer. And these good men and women stood up and said, we will be that answer. That loses their sacrifice of self, any hope of them having continuing life, their training, the grueling hours to master a sword or a prayer or exorcism. You take all that away when suddenly you go, well, they can also just do a prayer to God, and he'll grant him these powers to heal with a gentle touch and a kind word.
Right.
And suddenly, maybe not so bad.
Now, to be fair, there's negatives to that too, right? They have curses as well as like the blessings that they have and the, you know, the cool powers that they get. But
well, humor us, Nate. Give us one.
Allow me to turn my book to page, it's on page XX. Hold on a second.
It's the best
book ever.
What
it says. That's just what it says in the index. All right. So as far as like curses are concerned, there's a variety of different ways that you can acquire them. We'll see here. Some of the curses, I think this is one. Lamb of God, after sitting idly by, watching as mortal after mortal falls, victim to the predations of the adversary and its earthly minions, the Inquisitor begins to grow detached from the horror to which he bears repeated witness. Jaded by suffering, the Inquisitor starts viewing the flock not as a collection of individuals who need vigilance and protection, but as a single unit, quite literally as a flock. He begins to take the long view towards his mission, concentrating on what is best for humanity at large, and in doing so, closes his heart to the specific humanity surrounding each individual story he encounters. System. The Inquisitor is considered callous. You're going, what's that? Read the book. His conviction is equal to, or is equal to or higher than his piety rating, rather than simply higher than his piety rating. This curse has little effect on callous Inquisitors, save to ensure that they stay that way. So personality changes in worldview. Bad shit happens, basically.
And so they clearly built a sophisticated system in this, like you said, this is a starting game book. This is a new game book, right? In the middle of the Dark Ages line. And why did we touch it? Well, honestly, there's only one, right? That's in the line, I should say.
Yeah. Actually there is one other one. And I'll let you get back to your point, but the main reason why I thought it was imperative that we touch on it is because while it is a core book, you still got to have that Dark Ages book to make the character. This basically gives you all the stuff that isn't in that book. And that's actually, sorry to bash my mic, that's actually a tiny bit of a pet peeve for me as well.
But now, so I was only under the impression of one. I actually don't know what that second one is then.
It's like a companion.
Oh, well, that's...
We'll get to it.
Thanks, appreciate it. To my point. So right. This book is all in one, does have a sophisticated system and a theme of its own. But the powers having consequences is new. So they still are trying to cater to people like me and Nate and say, hey, you may have these powers, consequences are there. Now, to direct further example for those knowing, I don't like throwing them on an island saying your book sucks, because I don't think it does.
No.
I just think it's not my cup of tea. I want to highlight that. But there are some good nuggets here. For instance, their powers are more, they're called endowments, right, for a reason. And you orders care about that on page 147, in case you happen to be trying to follow along with a book in hand. And what I'm talking about here is that they give points of benedictions, investitures, legacies, and psalms. Now, what I care about are the last two. Legacies and psalms are where I can get behind that, right? One comes from the House of Murnau, right? Murnau, excuse me. Now, Murnau is a name in horror films, too. I won't get into that. I like that nugget's there. At least to me, it's a nugget. But the legacies talk about the fact that they're part of a group that studies, a noble family that studies, well, the arcane to expose Satan's corruption. Well, the hypocrisy here is that how does one study the works of Satan and not get corrupted by the powers they're discovering?
Right.
Right? So that makes it interesting. That's a full circle, nice, I could see a lot coming from that. When you get to Psalms, it's the word of God channeled through the Inquisitor's voice. Why this is cool, I, the player, don't have to have control of it. Right? That leaves it to the ST to decide when my prayers work and don't, based on my, not just RP, the story. Right. What counts. That, I always like the fact that there's a deity that listens to billions of prayers a day of all sorts of nonsense, right? Everyone needing everything. And that's what goes on. And however, there's one that maybe gives prayers, but they're for other people.
Right.
Never for themselves. And because of that, they just felt it was that. And what if it is a kid? I always like this. Now imagine that one bad night, the budding Anarch War bleeds over and these Anarchs run in to make a quick fix, and the churches never have true faith because people there are basically just trying to live. They're more here to get bread and food than they do care about a god. Just please help us. And they swarm in. Free chance for blood, but as they go in, this kid is at the forefront and just asks God to make sure that, you know, please protect these people in here because they're good people, and please help. And then that kid gets his prayer answered. That's the one who gets some sort of grand effect that makes a story, right? Makes it compelling and moves forward. And then later on, maybe you add a couple decades, maybe a decade, and that kid enlists in the war but hasn't changed. Has held to his prayers, has stuck to it, but like joined the crusade but took a vow of pacifism. Right? How does that happen? You tell me. There's great things that can come from this. You don't have to leave it as is. But that's a lot of encouragement to players to see those unique angles to take at this, to not be atypical.
Right. I think moving right along, I do want to mention one thing. Part of the reason why I kind of really couldn't get into this book is just the sheer amount of info dump that came at the beginning of the book. And for some people, you know, there's a lot of people out there who really they get into all of this stuff. And I, you know, I'm among them. I like the canon material of White Wolf. I like the background stories, but like when I pick up this game book and the first 130 some odd pages is just like background and exposition and kind of data dumping before I actually even get into anything game related where, you know, I'm actually now getting into the meat and potatoes of the game. Like, yeah, we preach constantly like that. Tell a story, get into the story, but like also it is a game and I want some material that, you know, can keep my attention over chapter and chapter of just like story of names. And I'll be honest with everybody here. When you start giving me name after name after name, it can be very difficult for me to keep track of who we're even talking about at a point. And so that's kind of something I was experiencing reading through this book.
And I'm going to agree with you 100%. There's one of the challenges to writing is going to always be not losing your audience in your description. And that means your descriptions that are must to paint the picture have to be compelling enough and short enough to echo in their mind to move forward quickly. In other words, pacing. If you don't have that pacing down, you risk losing a lot. People have to spend time to go through it, especially in our situation as a world these days. It's a lot, right? Mm-hmm. We're jumping around, getting all the info we can, trying to get stuff done, getting stir crazy. A lot of people reading a book probably, I want to do other things too. And that's that's the thing. And if you're reading a book like we were doing and you're going through this, and like Nate said, you start going, okay, here we are about this crusade. And all right, so did you know about the Pope? Didn't care either. Did you get here about, why am I? It's the Inquisitor book. It's the Inquisitor book. Why didn't it start, behold the Inquisition, and then cite other things, right? And I'm thinking to myself, Bob, make your own book. And they're absolutely right.
Right.
But there's a lot of people who tackled one book to give a lot and want to do it. And I get that. The problem is, for a lot of folks, to sit and read something, to read 176 pages before you get to what we like to call the crunch, that's rough.
Right, the game of the game.
Because if you, and here's why, before people go, Jesus, we got to tell a story. Yeah, you do. Here's the problem. The method you went about it, how everyone starts any game, is they read your info about the game a little bit. The next page should be a definition of rule.
Right.
How this would look on your sheet. Hey, we talked to you about the Inquisitors and the Inquisition. Here are the four possible orders. Now, on your sheet in this section, and then just label that out. Lay it out. Why do you do it that way? You're supposed to prepare me to play this role. Now, there are options, and you can have that in a lot of a crunch section. But if you did it that way and maybe sparse the history, like, did you want to know about blah, 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 save some ink and put in there, hey, refer to this internet source, get more info and blah, blah, blah. And in some books, they did that. Right. But we have to remember, this the IP has changed hands and is done,
yeah,
you know.
Of course it has, yeah. It's gone through revisions, through different perspectives. And, you know, this book came out in 2002. And in 2002, you know, we talked about this in Dark Ages Europe. You know, that mentality of like, just write a big long story and people will love it. And that's why they'll play. I think it was a little short-sighted. And I think we're really starting to come to that conclusion now, especially within the Dark Ages stuff, because this is a lot of that stuff that was produced later in the vampire lines. And I'll tell you, if they had started off with like a small intro, couple of, you know, 15, 20 pages of intro, and then introduced those orders, you know, introduced the Red Order, the Ocula Dei, the Oculi Dei, and got to read them like they did with Vampire originally. You got to read about the Bruja. And then you go, oh, man, I want to know more about Bruja. Okay,
exactly.
We'll talk about it later on down the road. But here's a sizzler. Here's something to really get your blood pumping, you know, to get you interested in the game. But in this one, you gotta go through 130 pages to get there. And by that time, I was so kind of bored, I didn't even care. I was just like, great, get me through it. And a lot of it was then repeated information. So it was like, all right, why'd you tell me up front if you're just going to tell me again here in a shortened version?
And the reason, the repetition, I do know that. We all know that. It's because it's written for all audiences.
Right.
If the big one didn't get you, let's see if repetition gets everybody else. And now we're on the same page. Let's try to produce a game. And that's that. But is there unique stuff? Yes. Is there good stuff in here? Absolutely. And if you go through it, actually, bottom line, if you're like, I want a lighthearted game, and I'm going to get away from vampire politics. I don't know how lighthearted it's going to be in Dark Ages, but if you want to get away from vampire politics and maybe that whole undead, do some stuff in the sun that isn't a werewolf or nonsense.
Right.
This is the game for you.
I don't want to play a ghoul. I want to play someone with conviction and faith, and also has some interesting, maybe little political things happening in the background. But then I just want to kill a monster. This is the game for you.
And I want to argue right now that French bread has an armor rating of 1. Right? I just want to put that out there. Some tough French bread.
Why does French bread have an armor rating of 1? I guess you could make like an armor suit out of it, right? just old twine and French bread?
I'm just commenting. There was some French bread in the store that was laid out, and I was like, why is this bread always tough? And the guy behind the counter, I forget their title, he's not the butcher, but he was like, oh, there's different types. Italian bread, fresh stuff is good, but later on, you know, there's actual French bread that's designed to be tough. I was like, why? Oh, you tear it and dip it with wine, have it with cheese, you get to enjoy it. I just stared at him. I'm like, you for real?
He could have been the baker or the candlestick maker.
He could have been the baker. I don't know. But that's what he said. And I was like, oh, okay, to dip it in the wine and the cheese and the coronavirus and I let it go. Where I was like, cool. Right. Cool. Thanks, man, for telling me. But I did pick it up, and it did feel weighty.
Oh, yeah. Well, at least it wasn't one of those limp French bread loaves. Nobody likes a limp French bread loaf.
It was one of the ones I felt that really seriously could deflect one good whack from a broomstick.
So a little bit more background information about this. This book is part of the 2002 event Year of the Damned. That is the year that Demon the Fallen came out. So it kind of makes sense in that regard. I'll give you some of the other titles. There's seven of them total if you want to track them down. This one kind of shocked me, and I didn't really think that this was the case. But the first one is World of Darkness Mafia. Didn't anticipate that. Of course, State of Grace is one that we've reviewed already. Kindred of the East, Heresies of the Way, Werewolf the Apocalypse Possessed, Hunter the Reckoning, Fall from Grace, this book, Dark Ages Inquisitor, and of course, the Demon the Fallen rulebook. So if you're following along, White Wolf has had these like yearly or somewhat yearly events kind of like themed their story around. That's where this book kind of originates from, to be within that theme.
And to be against something like Demon, good luck. Hey.
Right.
They were back then too, I suppose, the right stuff. Yeah. So other than powers, other than story content and build, I feel we gave our overall already.
Yeah.
I really do. I feel we did that. What I will say is I'll encourage you folks, of course, get your own opinion. Send questions to us on our Twitter, reach out to us on our own Discord. There's two of them, you know, one for all podcast listeners, one for our patrons, of course. And you'll even find patrons on that too. You can reach out and realize I'm not Nate. And I just fell into this that Nate
It's you were doing perfect. I was like very encouraged by your willingness to spread that. I was like, damn, Bob's taking over that shit. Nice.
Just fell into it. I was like, what am I doing right now?
Bob, you've finally graduated to tier 3 podcaster. No, but that's true too, because like we both have our own, like Bob has his Twitter. I don't know if he uses it that often. Bob has an Instagram. Then I have an Instagram, and then I run the Vampire the Masquerade 25 years podcast Instagram and Twitter. But we basically exchange information and all those. So
all the time.
Now, I guess unless you had anything else, I'll now proceed to our next bit of business.
Please, sir.
Okay. So we have heard from many sources that they would like us to review the Fall of London, the V5 Fall of London book. And so we've decided that that's appropriate. It is a vampire book that has come out. We should review it. Like all things, we have to read it. Neither of us have devoted the attention. Just in case you don't know, when you do a podcast review a week, basically the only game books you get to read are the ones you're reviewing. So, having said that, we're going to slightly derail our regular scheduled review for next week, and we're going to give you like a greatest hits episode or one of our Teach Me Hows that we've only released for our patrons so that we can take an extra week to record. So what that means is, if you've been listening to us for a while, we won't have a new review next week, but we'll have something for you. I'll definitely make some cool stuff you can listen. And then 2 weeks from now, we have decided we will review The Fall of London. And I assume sometime within a couple weeks after that, we'll probably do the Chicago Folios as well, if you're down with that, Bob.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, we're going to, you know, be consistent and not forget about V5. There are so many fans out there that's what you know. So we want to give you those reviews as well. Let you know our opinions, our perspectives, and, you know, of course, we'll disagree with many of you on many different portions of it, but we're going to give you the Nate and Bob perspective.
I think you said it best. Well, you said it first and best.
Hot damn. That was a good thing. All right. So, yes, feel free. One other thing. Folks have asked us about Gen Con. Truth is, we don't know.
Like, I can answer this a little more with a little more clarity. Let's add some common sense. I think Gen Con, if they have it, will be a miracle, first and foremost. Okay? Even if they do, I think the year that this, if there's not any solution that we can be given concrete that works, right, it's not smart to meet up in mass just to play some games that you could play online. I'm being 100% honest with you there. However, are we doing anything? Because normally, typically, we meet up at Gen Con. Yeah, we're doing it now. We're on Discord.
Right.
We're here. Right. You can reach out to us. You can talk to us. You can engage with us. And we're here more frequently because we're shut down like you guys, at least for the moment, some of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you should take advantage of it. And is Gen Con going to end or make a break? We can't speak to it. We're not Gen Con. Again, we are not Gen Con. So that's the honest answer. Do you want to add to that?
I don't have anything that is going that I can say this is absolutely what's going to happen. But what I will tell you is, for me, what is important right now is that my friends and my family are safe. And, you know, I live outside of state from most of my friends and my family. And what's important to me is that those folks are safe and that I can be close to them when the time comes. So I don't know even where I'll be come Gen Con time. It's honestly been one of those things that I didn't even really care about. I kind of just said, don't care. However, you know, I do, in my later years, I'm taking some medications, and some of those medications might put me at risk, put my immune system at risk. And I definitely don't want to be in a place where it's easy for me to get something. So right now, sort of my default position is, even if Gen Con happens, I probably don't want to be in the convention center. That doesn't necessarily mean that I won't be around, because if I am living in Indianapolis, I'll want to see my friends that do come to town, but probably I'll be avoiding large quantities of people and doing things that are much more intimate. You know, maybe playing with some of my friends if I can get them to take the time to come to my place. But I don't know for sure. But that's just kind of my default. At this point, I probably want to avoid. Now, let's see where the rest of the year goes. Let's see where summer leads us. But to me, this is, I want to connect with you folks right now. Whatever happens in August, that's some stuff for August to worry about. Until then, let's just try to stay safe, stay at home if we can, stay healthy, and just be smart and take care of the people you love. So that's it.
That's me smiling, saying that's all needs to be said.
Well, hopefully you folks enjoyed our podcast and you'll run out. Here's a cool thing. Inquisition book, if you want to get it, you can get a tabletop copy of this book for cheap off DriveThruRPG. So I think it's only like $20. So super easy to get, but me and Bob probably won't play it.
It's the first time I'm saying I agree. Normally I'd try anything. I don't have that interest. Nah. It's not pulling on me.
Yeah, I fear that in a lot of ways we're kind of like telegraphing our opinion of Hunter the Reckoning, but I am going to hold off. I am going to wait. I'm going to give it the proper review it deserves, just like everything else. But yeah, Inquisition book, it's great if you want to be a storyteller to make bad guys for your vampires to fight. Other than that, whatever. Anyways, next week we'll be back with a pre-recorded piece of podcastery for you to enjoy, and in 2 weeks we'll review that V5 title. So cool. Until next time, I am Nathan,
and I'm Bob. Nah, I don't know what that noise is.
Thank you for listening to 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. If you like our podcast and you'd like to help support our show, consider backing us at patreon.com/25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade. We offer reward tiers of additional Patreon-only podcasts, t-shirts, and personalized gaming experiences. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and go to our website, utilitymuffinlabs.com, for links to all of our social media, additional podcasts, and more. If you'd like to chat with us, submit a title for review, promote your gaming related stuff, or anything else you can think of, email me at nathan@utilitymuffinlabs.com. Utility Muffin Labs, consistently rated adequate.